Mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. Place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub. What a guest we have for you this second hour of the show. You know, Alexandra Holzer has grown up haunted. To begin with, she's the daughter of famed ghost author Hans Holzer, and she has continued the family legacy by delving deep into mysterious phenomena. She's going to tell us about her upbringing, how she juggles the roles of mother, media personality, and paranormal investigator. Well, here are some of her spookiest experiences, and let me remind you that she and I, along with Dave Schrader, appear as judges on an upcoming episode of the Travel Channel's Paranormal Challenge. The series debuts this coming Friday, June 17th on the Travel Channel. I think it's at 9 p.m. East Coast time, and we'll be all appearing together on a later episode. But right now, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll see a photograph of Alexandra and Dave Schrader and myself at the haunted West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville. And her website is hauntingholzer.com. Fittingly enough, Alexandra Holzer, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, I had a lot of fun meeting you and hanging out with you in West Virginia. We kind of just hit it off, didn't we?
We really did, and I don't find that strange at all. I think that it takes one to know one, and I think we're all very like-minded, and it really was just such a joy to meet you. You were really very funny and just so intelligent, and really good match. I think we did some really good work there for the show, so it was awesome.
Well, thank you very much, because I can say the exact same thing about you. We just had fun. I mean, the first night we met, we sat down for dinner, and you were telling me some of these incredible things about your life and your past, and instantly I was like, we have got to get some of these stories out there on the airwaves.
Yeah.
Now, I know that, for one thing, it has to be strange altogether to grow up in a family that is world famous for ghost research. And
yeah,
so, you know,
it is. It's humbling now, I think, which is quite interesting. We come through the cycle of life, and yet when we think we're supposed to be more knowledgeable as we age, we really are just becoming newbies at figuring things out in life and what you know everything means. Growing up the way that I did, I really didn't get it, and I knew I was always sensitive to my environment. When I use that term sensitive, that my father, Dr. Hans Holzer, had used quite a bit and kind of pushed it into modern times, if you will, meaning that you have your sixth sense, which we're all born with, tapping into that sixth sense and really utilizing it. So it was always there. Things always happened to me, but it wasn't really popular to kind of talk about that environment. And I really was one of a kind, if you think about it, you know. So it was a very strange way to grow up during the 70s and 80s when people would just kind of, you know, look at you sideways if you mention the word ghost. You know, you must be a freak. So
yeah,
it's pretty weird.
And you wrote this book, Growing Up Haunted, a ghostly memoir, and not only was your father this famous ghost enthusiast, but your mother, Catherine, was a bona fide countess, right?
That is correct. My mother, you know, as some people would kind of say, well, your family's a little bit snobbish. Your father won't take my phone calls. Your mother is often about being related to Catherine the Great, so she's a countess and so forth and an artist. And I kind of was stuck in the middle because I didn't really know what the answer to that would be. You know, we have relations to Catherine the Great. My grandfather was a Russian count, so we're technically blue bloods. And, you know, when she married my father, now mind you, my father was, 20 years older than my mother. You know, it's a very, very big deal. And so he had his background, you know, as an author and researcher and really kind of modernized the field, if you will, and was a pioneer. My mother comes in. She's, you know, coming from royal heritage. It's an amazing combination of the two, if you will. So it's a lot at once to have for two parents. So.
And so since your dad was a count, your mom's a countess, are you a countess as well? What does that make you?
That makes me kind of, yeah, it does. It makes me blue blood, for sure. And I am in that line of being a countess, absolutely. And it's very bizarre. I mean, you know, my father had a book out called Psychic Photography in the 70s. And I do not, there's just no copies out. You'd have to probably go on eBay to find them. But we actually, my sister and I, have a few left from his stash, if you will. And, you know, in there, in our Manhattan apartment, there is an image of Catherine the Great handing the crown to my mother, who was just sitting in the living room as my father was doing a photography session, because he always took photographs all the time. And so he printed it in the book. And there is a correlation there, that there is royalty, but not from a snobby end of it, that because, you know, her father married into that family line, we all connected. We were all kind of, it just kind of meshed, and that my mother was supposed to continue on that lineage. So yeah, we're technically, my sister and I are considered, I guess, you know, a countess, if that, you know, but probably today it's too modernized to even use the term. But
oh, I would use it if I were you. You should, from now on.
Good on me, honey.
Yeah. You got to be Countess Alexandra Holzer. That is.
If it's worth doubting, I'll use it.
Yeah. I would give anything to be Count Boren here, but no. and since Americans are so ignorant, really, about royalty, just, you know, quickly, what exactly does that mean? What is a count and a countess?
Yeah, well, basically, I mean, it's on the baron side. There's a baroness side and a baron side. So first off, if we're going to get into it, we really need to know which side we're on, which is really quite funny, but it's true. Anything royal, there are layers to it, and there are sides to it, and very political. So we're on the baron side of it, and basically it just gives you that title that you've married into a family that is known for, you know, establishing something somewhere in, you know, the world. And basically my grandfather, which was Count Alexander Buxhoveden, so the name is Buxhoveden. You then, there's a crest of that family name, you know, out in near Germany, you know, where it's just basically a town that, you know, they created this crest because that's part of royalties. You get these little, you know, icons made and so forth, and it's really quite bizarre. But you're recognized. Your family name technically becomes recognized, and that's really kind of what being a count or countess is. It's just that family name is out there, and it's associated with blue bloods and royalty. But it doesn't necessarily mean money or, you know, anything like that. It's just a question of the family crest. It's very prestigious, distinguished, upper class, so forth, so on. And that's why I said earlier in the show about snobbery. It's often associated with, it kind of goes with the territory. So,
is your husband a count because he married you?
I think he's regretting that he married me. But that's for another show.
He's
no,
counting the years. One, two, three, 4 years. So I should have married a countess then. I should have married you, and I'd be Count Varen.
Probably. Well, she doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Wow.
I think you marry up, not marry down. So, yeah. But
that's funny. So yeah. Now, okay, we've got about 4 minutes till our first break. At what point were you able to put some kind of objective sense on this odd lifestyle you were born into and start appreciating the spiritual realm yourself? When did you accept the spiritual realm?
Probably around the age of 8 or 9, I accepted it because I had a fascination with it as a kid. When Halloween came around, that was kind of like the first notation that for me, you know, I was so excited to dress up in demonic costumes, never, you know, which is fine, very love and light now, but, you know, it was very dark. And my grandmother, who married the Count of Russia. Rosine was Parisian, and she was the one that would tell me a lot of the ghost stories, and she was very psychic. So around that age, she would tell me things, and I just automatically was drawn into wanting to know more. So that's really when it began for me.
And was there one particular time when you first, you know, saw or encountered a ghost and you realized, whoa, this is actually physically real?
Yeah, it was probably around that age, because once she started talking to me about this and I just automatically responded to her like it was natural, things started happening. It kind of like opened up that portal, if you will, which I believe happens today if we open up ourselves to the happenings that occur, and we read these stories about people coming back to tell about them dying and reliving that experience and so forth, and ghost stories. It opened up the portal for me to be more sensitive to what we all have innately built into us as human beings. And I started having impressions of people sitting on my bed at night. I saw people come in and out of my apartment in Manhattan, Long Island, where my grandmother had lived. I would spend summers with her. And I would hear voices and singing and people chattering back and forth. And it was actually quite frightening, but I just kind of pushed it off and just kind of, you know, didn't think about it. So
this really, in the beginning, it wasn't completely shocking because you already knew this is what is supposed to happen.
Right? Yeah, it was very, it's almost very natural for me at that age to just be like, oh, okay. I never really thought anything of it. It was almost like I was born to kind of get it.
And were these people interactive? Were they conscious entities that you were seeing that seemed to know what was going on in the environment around them?
Yes and no. Some would come through, wouldn't acknowledge me, but went about their business, and others would try to get my attention.
Did you ever, you said, sitting on your bed. See, to me, that's the spookiest thing, that you could just wake up at night and there's some dude sitting on the bed. I mean,
I could go sit on your bed and really scare the bejeebus out of you, but I wouldn't do that. No, that's okay.
Well, I've had some very strange things appear in my bedroom, so I might be used to it by now.
I've heard.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what these beings are and get some of Alexandra's insights on how we should approach the spiritual realm, some of the experiences that she has had. We'll also talk some about the Paranormal Challenge show, which is going to debut this coming Friday, June 17th, on the Travel Channel, hosted by Zach Bagans. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and my guest this hour is Countess Alexandra Holzer. Her website is hauntingholzer.com. And it is linked up at speakingofstrange.com. growing up haunted, it's no wonder that Alexandra Holzer is an author, a paranormal investigator, a media personality, and a little bit later we'll talk about the fact that she juggles all that around and is a mother. We won't give away too much, but I even got to see a mini pilot that she recently produced that is being viewed by some big shots in show business right now. And it would be a great show if it got produced. Be sure to visit her website, hauntingholzer.com. Holzer is spelled H-O-L-Z-E-R. Again, that's H-O-L-Z-E-R. So, Alexandra, tell me, based upon what you have seen, what you have experienced, what you have learned, what do you think happens to us when we die?
Good question. Basically, I think it depends on how we die. My biggest bugaboo, and more so because of TV shows over the years and so forth, and storytelling and docudramas, which are probably better in portraying what happens if we go off of factual evidence, like through my father's research, and so, and just in general reading books on people's experiences, how we die really depicts on what happens and if there's going to be a haunting, and then if there's a haunting, layers to that is what kind of haunting, level A, level B, and so forth. And I tend to digress on this topic, so you'll have to bear with me, but I feel that if we are at peace with our passing, in other words, if we know we're going to die from an illness, we've been told, and some people fight that, and then they die, and they didn't want to die, and they might still stay, linger, and they become a ghost because they're trapped. In essence, that's what a ghost is. They're trapped. They have either died tragically, suddenly, horrifically, boom. You know, this wasn't supposed to happen. This wasn't the plan. You have your classic, you know, type A haunting. You have a ghost. They haven't quite crossed from the earth plane over to the other side, which is a term that Dr. Hauntholzer used quite a bit and popularized it, if you will. And so, now, if you've died peacefully and you've crossed over and the guides, which I believe exist on the other end, have come to pull you and they can be related to you, they can be assigned to you, kind of like school teachers in school, in elementary school, you know, same process on the other end, you know. You have higher-ups that come and help you, and they guide you through that process of leaving your body, which is your earthly home, and crossing to the plane of existing without the body, the physical, if you will, and into the spiritual. And so if you are able to cross, then you are a spirit, which is the term I call free spirit, which is where it comes from, where you can come and go as you please. You can certainly help the living, but you are free to go. As a ghost is stuck and is either angry, confused, or there because they choose to be there. And so that's really kind of what it breaks down to.
And if we consider that people on this planet, they occupy every bit of the spectrum of behavior, you know, whether you like somebody or don't like somebody or you find them mediocre. Obviously, some of these ghosts are the souls, the spirits of some nasty people, some mean folks. Maybe that's why nobody was there to help them, to guide them. Nobody wanted to be associated with them. Have you ever come to contact with a spirit that really frightened you in some particular way or gave you a creepy experience?
Yes and no. I mean, I have yet to be thrown into any environment where I'm going to have a creepy experience, only because, you know, unless you're really going and doing major investigations in these bigger places, like asylums or hospitals or prisons, if you will, you know, that's concentrated, major concentrated energy, and most of it's pretty much going to be bad and evil. So that's where I feel you're going to be pulled into to feeling those emotions and experiencing the worst of the worst. Now, I can walk through a wooded forest, mind you, unbeknownst to me, and some guy went and killed some woman heinously, you know, 2 inches away from me, and then I can feel that. You know, I haven't really been around too much of that. I've been pushed, I've been tapped, I've heard people speak in my ear. I've heard a bazillion EVPs, and that's the experience that I've had up until now. As far as the other side of it, everything's been very light and airy, you know, and that's not a bad thing either. I mean, I think a lot of people, and again, because of TV, tune into the darker stuff because it's very fascinating and intriguing, but the lighter stuff is very inspirational and uplifting. And today, especially in the day and age that we're living in, we really do need more of that. And so I feel that that part of me, which is really where my experience lies as of right now, is what I've had, and it's basically just knowing that there possibly could have an existence of angels and guides and those that are there to help and not hurt.
So if someone is listening right now who has never experienced a ghost, at least doesn't believe he or she has, what advice would you give that person if that person wants to have some encounter, some evidence? What is the mental and physiological approach that you will advise people to embrace if they want to have that connection?
My advice is this. Now it's a bit difficult today, again, with the media and TV shows and so forth, to give advice because people just tune in to that, unfortunately, which is great, but then, again, it pulls away from the intelligence side of things where we read and absorb and do the research and ask those questions that you just asked of me. My advice is to first and foremost, to allow yourself to not be very hard-nosed on it and not to label yourself anything. Don't go in and say, I'm a skeptic, I'm a believer, I'm this, I'm that. You're just who you are as a person. Now, if you want to have that experience, I know that many places today versus in my father's day and age have teams. And those teams go out, and what do? They investigate. Where do they go? People's homes. Then they go to the more heightened places, like I've mentioned earlier in the show, the prisons, the asylums, the hospitals. Okay. And there's groups, and you pay, and you go, and so forth, and you may or may not have an experience. My advice to anybody is you can certainly do those, and you can certainly search within yourself. You can get a digital recorder if you feel you want to know if there's somebody around you right now, because they're always around you, and that's my point. But now you have to be careful, because on the flip side of that coin, what if you're pulling in something that's just waiting for you to call it and it's negative? You have to be very, very careful. And so you don't need to be a ghost buster, so to speak, to go and do this sort of thing, but you really have to have your wits about you, and you have to know that believing in prayer of some sort, of any faith, if you have any belief whatsoever, that in itself will protect you, because you really need to have that. And just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. So it's a very, very complex kind of thing. So my advice is to kind of first figure out what it is that you want to seek, and then figure it out from there as to what kind of person you are that's going to go seek that. Because you may not like what's going to come back at you.
Now, you and your husband have 4 children, is that right?
That is correct.
And so now that is a big task, just to, you know, be the mother of a family in this day and age, especially with 4 children. How does your family take this side of your life? How has it impacted them, and how do you juggle all this stuff around?
Well, here's the interesting thing, Joshua. It is really hard as a woman doing this, and the reason why I say that, now we all know Dr. Hans Holzer was a man, and he went out and he did travel the world to have all the evidence and the research and the contacts and the amazing transmediums and the relationships in general, and the stories. He wasn't at home raising us most of the time, and I flipped that role where I chose to be at home to start the family, and my husband went to work. But, you know, to really do this type of work, you have to be out there. You have to be, there's only so much you can do online and via phone. You really have to meet these people face to face. You have to hug them. You have to embrace their stories. You have to be in the environment of the ghost and or spirit who has the message at hand, or worse, demonic situation and so forth. So to be the woman who has the children, who also runs the house, who is head of the household in that sense, it's tough, because now I have to leave that role and go out and then do the other role that my father did. And it's not really done today. It's mostly more male-dominated, and they leave the children at home, and there's somebody there watching them or helping or whatever. I actually play both roles. I really do rule the roost, so to speak.
Okay, we got about
I mean, I really do. I keep things ticking.
Well, yeah.
I'm so anal and so obsessive that I'm on a time clock.
We got about a minute before our break. Let me just ask you before we go. do your children see ghosts? Do they have your ability? Is this something genetic that has been passed down?
Well, again, remember, I feel that we all have that sixth sense that we can tap into. But, yeah, my oldest, who's now 12, who is my oldest child, who is the second child that we have that's a juvenile diabetic who was diagnosed a year ago. So that's why I say I'm on a clock. I'm not kidding you. Every 3 hours with blood checks. But she is very sensitive. She's very creative, very artistic. Mommy, I heard something in the room. I heard footsteps in the hallway. And this is the house that we live in is not haunted by any means. If there's anything coming in, it's because I've pulled it in, and I'm not kidding. She's heard things, and so, yeah, she is. And she's the oldest, and that's great because I don't want the younger ones to tap into that yet.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, when we come back from the break, we'll talk a bit about the Paranormal Challenge show, which has taken Alexandra to some creepy places. Okay, I was there for one of them, but not the other. And we you don't want to spoil too much about the program. Obviously, we can't tell you know, who won or any of this kind of stuff that probably wouldn't even make sense without you watching the show. But we can talk about the locations. And so when we come back, we'll find out where Alexandra has been investigating as a part of this program, judging what's happening there. And again, this is a show that debuts this coming Friday, June 17th on the Travel Channel. And I believe it is 9 p.m. East Coast time. I will confirm that. But her website, which I highly recommend you visit, is hauntingholzer.com. That's H-O-L-Z-E-R. If you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll find a photo of myself and Alexandra and Dave Schrader, and we are actually posing. You can't see it in the picture, but we're right across from the electric chair at the West Virginia State Penitentiary that was used to fry numerous terrible people. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening. From Asheville, North Carolina, land of the sky. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange, and my guest this hour, Alexandra Holzer. You have perhaps read her books, seen her on TV, heard her on numerous programs. Her father published over 100 books, Hans Holzer, on ghostly phenomena, and she is continuing the legacy, and one way she's doing it is by acting as a judge on the new Paranormal Challenge TV show that debuts on the Travel Channel this coming Friday, June 17th, 9 p.m. East Coast time. Alexandra, what was the first location that you visited as a judge on this show?
My first location was at Eastern State Penitentiary, and I remember Zach Bagan saying, "Have you been here, Alexandra?"
Yeah.
And I said, "No," and I wanted to continue saying, "I haven't been anywhere since I've had the children." But, you know, I didn't. I didn't want to seem too nerdy for him. But that was the first location, and it just hit me right away. And he was so excited to show me walking on the outside, because as you know, when we went, when you and I were paired up together, that, you know, Zach does a tour for us, as he does for everybody else, to kind of show, you know, the place and so forth, whether you've been there or not. At Eastern State Penitentiary, he was touring us on the outside, obviously with Chief Judge Dave Schrader. There were certain parts of the prison on the lower level underneath, basement-wise, I guess if you can call it, where there's like the seediest of seediest people there that were kept there. And he's like, you go in there, you know. And so he was, you know, it was a very amazing experience, because it's one thing to go in, I guess, with a team of people. And also, when you have a team, you trust these people to have your back. If you're walking around, you know, and you're passing cell by cell by cell, and you're learning the history of, you know, who was in what cell, who did what, it is becoming within itself the story very scary before anything's happening. And so as a woman being in a prison, I definitely was quite interested to see how I would react to that environment.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Eastern State Penitentiary is in Pennsylvania, around Philadelphia there, operational from 1829 up until around 1971, and Al Capone was kept there. So you went to that place, and then you did a second appearance as a judge at the West Virginia State Penitentiary. I think Zach likes sending you to prisons for some reason, right?
Well, this is going to become the running joke, and it's funny because a lot of his crew members actually live in my neck of the woods, Joshua. So, you know, we're all like chatting, and it's like, I wonder if I'm going to go back out again, and I'm sitting here thinking, not unless it's a prison. I don't know.
And of course, it must be odd, because obviously in these prison environments, women were usually not present.
Now,
I know that
some were held.
Yeah, there were some areas where, you know, they had smaller populations for the women, segregated, but most of the inmates were men who never got to see women. So when you go through those areas, what is the collective feeling that you pick up on from that type of environment, where a man's innate, you know, carnal urges are being stripped from him as punishment?
Well, the first thing, at least I felt, and of course nothing's documented, we weren't there to really film any of that, the metaphysics of it, if you will. I mean, I right away felt like I needed to have my coat on me, covered. I didn't really have one. Actually, Dave gave me his, because, you know, I'm a New Yorker. We don't need coats, you know. But I really felt very, very cold. And as the night went on, of course, we were freezing in there, you know, because it was back in March and it was freezing. But there was a sense of, you know, aloneness. I felt very vulnerable. I felt like I was being watched. A couple of names came to me, and of course I had nobody to really tell, because, you know, that's not what we were there for. But I, as a metaphysical person, you know, knew right away that they were there watching me and telling me things. And it was very, very intimidating at the same time, because you're moving around. It becomes, you know, the prison becomes a set because you're filming. You can detach from that, and then, of course, the spirits will detach from that. But I definitely, all eyes were around, and I felt like I was being watched the whole evening.
A few nights ago, I did an appearance on Coast to Coast AM, kind of impromptu. Sometimes they call me up at like 3 in the morning and say, can you come on and talk for an hour? What are you doing right now? Oh, I was sleeping, but
that's okay.
Give me a minute. You know, I've done that many times. And so I went on, and I talked about a lot of stuff, including, of course, this program. And I mentioned the fact that the historian, I believe his name was Tom, at the Moundsville prison, told me something that apparently he hadn't even shared with the research crew, that one night he and a few other people were there at the prison late, around 9 p.m., and they looked out and saw this ball of light kind of bobbing around in the yard, and, you know, they're dumbfounded. They see this is something clearly out of place, and it sort of floated over to the stairs, or the steps leading into the boiler room, and just went bob, 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 and just, you know, when you see something like that, What do you think they were looking at? What do you think this ball of light was that they were witnessing that followed that path?
Oh, come on. It's not a big deal. Give me a break. This is what cracks me up. What do you think we turn into when we die? We are energy in general, okay? And some of us, more than others, showcase it in different levels. However, when we leave our earthly home, which is our bodies, the materialistic part where, of course, we look at Playboy bunnies and think, yeah, I have to have some of that, you know, give me a break. That's nothing. That's the exterior. But when you do die, you are still transforming that energy of what your soul is and what your personality is into something that becomes that ball of energy. Now, how strong you are in showcasing that energy depends. Now listen, a lot of spirits who are restless, who are stuck, can travel in pairs. You might have five guys running in that yard together in that moment that Tom saw them. It could have been five inmates together going, come on, let's go, you know. It's really, to me, not that complicated. All we're seeing and all we're witnessing is moments in time of where energy is moving around us that once was a living human being. Far be it, a horrible human being, but there it is.
All right, well said. We're going to take our last break of this hour, and when we come back, a few quick questions. What do you think about these people who are atheists who say, hey, when you die, that's it, lights out, it's over, nothing matters, and what is the most important thing about, you know, the paranormal and the research that should be done? Anything, of course, you want to tell to the audience so they can learn more about you would be wonderful. I'm talking with Alexandra Holzer, and she is an author, a paranormalist. She is a mother, a media personality. I mean, she does it all. And, of course, if you know that name, Holzer, you know that she comes from a legacy of doing this type of work. Her website is hauntingholzer.com, and Holzer is spelled H-O-L-Z-E-R. I advise you to go there. It's linked up at speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll be right back. To Speaking of Strange. Is coming up next. That's the hour, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, when we discuss some of the more controversial and outrageous news from the past week. Definitely worth sticking around for. We have quite a pile of it. The world is getting so weird these days, but that's great for people like ourselves who enjoy delving into just how bizarre and amazing and remarkable it can become. The show is called Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, talking right now with Alexandra Holzer. Have her for a few more minutes here. And Alexandra, when you have people who inevitably come along once in a while, you know, strict Newtonian folks or whether they're atheist or whatever, and they say, okay, when you die, that's it, game over, this is all you have, this experience. How do you respond to those people?
I just say I feel sorry for you. You know, if that's, you want to go through life with blinders on, thinking you're the end-all be-all, then go for it. You'll be pretty much advise when you do die what the real deal is, and then I'll leave it up to the higher-ups to deal with you at that point. I mean, there's only so much you're going to do. You can't convince the world, you know?
Yeah. It's a very egotistical, you know, arrogant point of view for some people to believe that way. What do you think are the most important things that we should do in this field to further, you know, enlighten and advance insight?
I think we need to start balancing things. I think we need to go to back to Father's way of things and doing metaphysical and science together as one, because it's really key in order to respect of human life and the afterlife and things that we can't always explain, like humanoids, aliens, UFOs, other life forces, whether they're underground or above ground. I think that's really, we need to get back to our basics.
And so when people contact you and they say, yeah, gosh, I love what you're doing, I want to learn more about you and your work, take your time, tell folks what they can do if they want to read your books or see you in person. I mean, what do you tell those who want to support Alexandra Holzer?
I ask them to, obviously, I'm on Facebook, and now I've done the Twitter, thank you, under Alexandra Holzer, which is like, you know, I'm going back to that, but obviously for work and to mingle with colleagues, you know, that I do know of, is to just follow what I say. You know, everybody has a podium, but I'm really speaking from the heart and from my father's work. I have it in my basement in boxes, in corrugated boxes. I'm not lying, and, you know, this is really stuff that needs to be carried on to the next generation, and just to please support me and not worry about so much who's so popular and not popular, but really the message at hand is really key.
You actually still have a lot of great research that has never been published, never been released, that it, mm-hmm. just part of it's stuff that your father worked on, the stuff even related to the Amityville case, right?
I have that. I have UFO research, including the Betty Hill and Barney Hill case, you know, one of which had perished when my father did the interview. But I have a lot of things boxed up, and I'm kind of looking for the right person to share it with, because this field has become so vastly huge that it's good and bad, and I really don't know who I can trust. So I really have a lot. You're right, more than many people realize, but I'm going to be very cautious in my choosing as to who I would probably reveal that to with.
What was it about your father's involvement with the Amityville case that gained so much attention? What was his particular angle on that?
His angle was when he had brought in his medium of choice, which was Ethel Johnson Mayers at the time, was to really research the history of the property, the parcel, if you will, versus just the house at hand, because the house had originally been moved from another piece of parcel, so it was the parcel that was really the problem. His angle was going back into the 1800s and learning about the farmhouse that was there before, that there were townspeople that had complained about that area, and then the farmhouse had burnt down to the ground, and he had put that in his book, Amityville Fact or Fiction, because there was a lot of facts and there's a lot of fiction to it.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing a tremendous job, and I could not be more excited or honored that we have had this opportunity to work together on one episode of this show. I have no doubt we're going to be seeing each other and working on some more projects again soon. So thank you for everything that you've done and continue to do. It is not taken for granted, and thank you so much for being my guest on the program tonight.
Thank you for saying all of that, and I adore you, and I really do hope we can work together again soon, because it was just such a wonderful situation, and I hope that more people will catch on to you know, everything that we're trying to do. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we had fun. All right, well, there you have it, my friends, Alexandra Holzer. And the cool thing about Alexandra is that whenever you are the child of a person who has some fame, it's easy for people to define you the rest of your life according to that famous parent. And she has actually taken the legacy, the name, the work that her father did, and she has actually sort of re-envisioned it and continued it in a new, different, refreshing kind of way. And it's great to know that, you know, she reminds me a little bit of President Eisenhower's granddaughter, you know, because President Eisenhower's granddaughter says, yes, I came from this notable name, but now here's what I do, and uses that name in order to make sure that, you know, there is an audience there that initially understands I should listen to what's being said, but by the time you do it, you realize it's a whole new chapter, whole new segment, whole new legacy. When we come back, the Dark 30 Hour is going to be here. And it really is pretty dark, because it has to be. That's the world that we live in now. We are living in a dark world. And so I think this will be a dark 30 we're going to have some fun with. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual.